Bill Buckley here, and time to catch up on the gadgets and the tech news and all that sort of thing with the one and only, the gadget detective, Fevzi Turkalp, whom you can find on Twitter, at Gadget Detective. Morning, or I suppose to be absolutely strict about it, just about afternoon, Fevzi. How are you?
Afternoon, Bill. I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Pleased to have you. Let's start with the tech news. And gosh, what an interesting question you pose here. Could Google leave Australia?
Yeah, so Google has threatened the country of Australia because Australia is bringing in new laws that would make Google pay money for the news that it displays on its website in response to a search or that it's shared via its website. Because at the moment, you've got all these businesses generating news, and it costs money to generate news, as we all know. Mm. And what Google does is, you know, when someone searches for something and the search result contains news, Google display at least some of that news on their own website without the user of the computer having to go to the original source of the news and see any advertising and allow them to earn any money.
Right.
So they're effectively benefiting from the content but not paying for it, and they're making commercial gains out of it. So the Australians have said, we're bringing in a law that will force you to enter into an agreement with news companies and pay them something, although it doesn't specify what it needs to be. Google, in response, and this is very interesting, has threatened to leave Australia, in other words, to leave Australians without Google search. So why are we talking about this? Why is it relevant? This is not Australia. It is relevant for a couple of reasons. One is that Google has 90 to 95% market penetration for search. That's to say 90 to 95% of search is done in Australia, and indeed most countries, is through the Google search engine. Now that is an extremely dominant position, and it's not lost on me that they're able to threaten a country. They're able to push back against a whole nation. There aren't many companies, you know, outside the big tech giants that can push back against the government in that way. And that tells us, in my opinion, that the likes of Google are too strong and that consideration should be given to mitigating that strength, let's say. So that's kind of interesting. The other thing is, Google is not the only game in town when it comes to search. And my personal favourite at the moment is a strangely named search engine called DuckDuckGo, as in duck as in the bird, repeated once, DuckDuck, and then the word go, all one word. Right. Now, this is a search engine. Now, I don't think
Never heard of that, Fevzi.
Well, there you go. And a few years ago, it wasn't all that great. I would say now I can find about 85% of what I want using DuckDuckGo as opposed to Google search. And the reason why you would want to do that is because DuckDuckGo's main selling point is it doesn't log your activities. It doesn't keep a record of every search you've ever done, where you've done it from, and try and work out everything about you. It doesn't try and monetize the data that you create, because the things that you search for online actually speak literally volumes about you. Yeah, and they say that Google knows when your daughter is pregnant before you do, and I would posit that it knows who the father is as well. So I just think that actually it would be a good time for us to think about, and DuckDuckGo is free, and it's perfectly good, and I just think it's safe. And when I want to do a search that in particular I will go to DuckDuckGo first, and only if I don't find what I want will I consider going to Google or another search engine, because they respect my privacy and for the most part give me exactly what I want. Okay. So I think it's a good time to try DuckDuckGo.
The only other one apart from Google I could have named off the top of my head would have been Ask Jeeves. Now that's going back a long way. That doesn't
don't
exist
think
anymore.
That's there
does
anymore.
It?
No. You've got Yahoo search still exists.
Oh, of course, yes.
And you've got Bing, which is Microsoft's equivalent as well.
Bing.
Bing is not Bing. It's not. Do you know? It's sometimes worth, when you're looking for something a bit esoteric and you're finding it hard to find it with any search engine, be it Google or others, it is worth dipping into other search engines because they do. Although there's a large degree of overlap, they do tend to have, you know, different things. It's like that sort of Venn diagram where there's an overlap, but actually there's little bits that are unique to each search engine that you wouldn't otherwise find.
Right.
It's quite good. But I just think it's just very interesting that you've got the likes of Google pushing back against nation states.
Yeah. Next question from a very uninformed layman here then. It is easy, is it, for something like Google to just stop serving a country, because you tend to think that the internet is absolutely global and, you know, we're always saying these terrible people doing bad things on it overseas, but we can't get to them and stop them from doing it. So how can those two things both be true?
So that's very interesting. So it depends what Google will do, because what Google could do is redirect all the searches from Australia to google.com, the American/global version, and then they could keep supplying it but get around the rules, or they could block it based on the location of the person searching, so what they call an IP address. Everyone that's on the internet at any given moment has a unique number called an IP address, an internet protocol address, and from that, in theory, you can tell where someone is. Now, for those that want to get around these things, and for example, in countries where there is censorship, and you know, parts of the internet are blocked to populations because they don't want them getting certain information and news, there are things called VPNs, virtual private networks, where you can appear to be in another country for all intents and purposes, and therefore you can get around these things that way as well. And people do it for other reasons as well. Like if there is a service, I don't know, I won't name it, but let's say a well-known video film service that isn't available in your country, or at least the same films are not available, people pretend to be in America and view those films,
right.
India or whatever, you know. So yes, they can to an extent block it, but my suspicion is that they would not necessarily stop the people from accessing it. They'd just cut off the revenue stream to those companies that they don't want to pay.
The other question I had was, are Google putting any rational argument to the Australian government, rather than just, you know, threatening to stomp off, as to why it's all right the way they do it at the moment to not pay for this material?
So this is an excellent question. So this goes back to discussions we've had before about what are these platforms. Are they publishers, in which case if you publish information that belongs to, you know, someone else's intellectual property, you should pay for it? Or are they merely conduits? So they argue, like the likes of Google and Facebook and Twitter, argue that they are just conduits, rather like copper wire is to British Telecom, and BT is not responsible for what is said over its lines. It doesn't have to pay for if someone breaches copyright or anything else. It's not responsible. It's just a conduit. And this is the stick that Donald Trump was threatening these tech companies with, to make them responsible. And clearly, you know, they are not quite one thing or the other. They are not a piece of copper wire, but nor are they a monthly magazine. They are something new and something with features of both. And that to me says that, you know, it has to be negotiated and that they should pay something. But they are big enough to say, well, we don't need to, because we have 95% of the market. Imagine if Facebook said to the UK population, we're pulling out of the UK. You know, that's
people would be very unhappy.
That's enough to get a government voted out of power.
There
are enough people that be hacked off, if they aren't already, with the particular government, that come the next election, they would punish them for it. And that to me just says that is a huge amount of power that these commercial organisations, which have no democratic accountability to us or anyone else, they wield that power. And I just think, you know, without you know, putting a sort of like a socialist hat on or anything, but that's a dangerous amount of power to be held so centrally.
What a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for that. We shall get on to your Gadget of the Week in just a moment. Bill Buckley at the helm, and Fevzi Turkalp, the Gadget Detective, is with us. If you want to follow him on Twitter, @GadgetDetective, sign for his Gadget of the Week. And it's a smartwatch. Interestingly, you've chosen a smartwatch. I hadn't really thought about them for a long time, Fevzi. I'd kind of got the idea that they'd been all the rage and that moment had passed. Am I madly wrong to say that?
Yeah, I think so. I think that wearable technology is the current thing and the next big thing as it develops. And for example, with the Apple Watch, we've seen that. We're now in the sixth generation of Apple Watch, and you know, we're seeing them as health monitoring tools. You're also going to see Apple launch, maybe at the end of this year or sometime next year, Apple Glasses as well, which is again a smart device which you will wear, and information will be, you know, projected onto the screen of the glasses. So it is a big category, but Apple Watches, which are market leaders, are expensive. You pay several hundred pounds for them. And what I liked about this one, so this is from a brand called Amazfit, Amazfit, and the model is the GTS 2 Mini. And that's important because Amazfit have got a shed load of different models that are all very similar and very similarly titled, and I will look at some of the best ones over the coming months, but this is the first one that I'm looking at. So this one's called the GTS2 Mini, not to be confused with the GTS Mini, because when I looked on Amazon, for example, I couldn't see this new model yet. This is a brand new model. So if you're interested in this, just make sure you don't accidentally get the GTS Mini, because that's the older generation. Right.
Unless it's a lot cheaper.
Well, look, this one is £79 this price.
Which is not a huge amount.
Which is about a fifth of the cost of an Apple Watch, depending on what you buy.
Good way of looking at it, yes.
It's got a lot of the features that some of those features aren't even on my fourth generation Apple Watch, which I wear, but only on the sixth generation. Things like oxygen saturation measurement. Right. So, and this is, you may have heard a lot about things called pulse oximeters lately, these things that can measure the amount of oxygen in your blood, because with COVID being as it is, one of the things that medical science has learned is that people who appear to be relatively well suddenly have dangerously low levels of oxygen in their blood. And this can be dangerous. I mean, people can die from this sort of thing. And you don't necessarily have all the symptoms that would be, you know, traditionally associated with low oxygen levels, you know. Mm-hmm. So and it does that. Now, only the, as far as the Apple Watches are concerned, only the current sixth generation does that. So my one that I paid considerably more than this for doesn't do oxygen saturation monitoring. It also, this watch also does 24-hour heart rate monitoring. So again, if your heart rate starts to become, and particularly at night, you may not even know that it's happening. You know, some people's heart rate suddenly goes up to, you know, 120, 160 for periods of time and then returns to normal. That's called tachycardia, and we're not always aware of it, particularly if we're asleep. So that's a good feature. I like the personalization features on this. You get a choice of more than 50 different watch faces that you can choose from, and you can even upload photos of your own choice to it to be your watch face. So if you've got an old watch, like for example my late grandfather's old watch, I love it. My intention is I will photograph it and upload it onto this, and just, you know, it'll be a little bit of nostalgia for me that it'll be like, yeah, I'll carry this watch. It does sleep quality monitoring, so not just in that amount of time that you're asleep, but what is the quality of that sleep? Are you in light sleep, deep sleep, or rapid eye movement sleep, REM sleep as it's called? Now, those last two types of sleep are the only types that are thought of as regenerative sleep. There are regeneration processes that go on in your body that are very important, you know, for the regeneration of your body, for the avoidance of dementia and heart disease and all these sorts of things. Those only happen in REM sleep and deep sleep. Mm-hmm. So some people may think, oh, great, I slept 8 hours, but not realize that they were sleeping very lightly. Also, although it doesn't officially detect sleep apnea, people with sleep apnea are often hovering in light sleep because their body is waking them up so they start breathing again. So again, sometimes it can be an indication that things might not be great. But also, most things that you can measure, you can improve, you know, this biofeedback idea. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, it can actually calculate the female menstrual cycle. So for women that want to estimate their possible fertility, although I dare say if it got it wrong, you couldn't sue them. So let's say that's for, you know, information only. It's got different sports modes. One thing I really liked about this was the battery life. So they're claiming 14-day battery life before you have to charge it up. Now, I think that's optimistic. It does depend upon you know, your
how
use
much you
of
use
the
it.
Device.
Yeah.
Yes, but yeah, if you take the other extreme, an Apple Watch, even the big one, you know, the one with the big screen, with the Apple Watch, I get about 1 to 1.5 days use out of it. Now, that sounds fine, just you'd say charge it every night, which you can do, except if you're trying to use it for sleep monitoring as well. Because if you're going to wear it during the night and wear it during the day, when are you going to charge it? So the fact that, I mean, even when they say 14 days and 7 days with heavy use, even if you get 4 or 5 days out of it, that's still so much better than 1 to 2 days from Apple. So that's okay. Great. Right. Pomodoro clock. Do you know what a Pomodoro clock is?
Is it a delicious tomato-flavoured clock?
It should sounds be, shouldn't like, it? Yeah. It's a countdown timer that has greatly increased my effectiveness. You know, what it does is you set it to a period of time, let's say 15 minutes, and you promise yourself that you will not be distracted for 15 minutes. You will not check your emails. You will not check your Twitter. You will not check your social media, nothing like that. Just do that for 15 minutes. And what I find is at the end of 15 minutes, when I've actually started getting into something, I'll set it for another 15 minutes and possibly another one. And I break the back of tasks in that way.
Okay.
You can use it to trigger the camera on your smartphone. So when you're doing selfies, you don't have to have your arm reaching out. You can prop up your smartphone and just tap your watch. And also it gives you breathing exercises and water resistant down to 5 atmospheres. £79, 4 stars out of 5, an amazing number of features for the money. Well done, Amazfit.
Lovely to talk to you. And he called you Kirsty for some reason there. I don't know why. that's what we call each other in private. We shouldn't be.
My secret is out, yes.
Yes. Fevzi, thank you so much. Fevzi Turkout, the gadget detective.